Hello, everybody. Recording live from somewhere.
What's good, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Skates and Plates on the Hockey Podcast Network. I'm your host, Brandon Rewicki. Well, how about that to close out the work week? The Jets kick off their road trip with a massive W. The Masters are underway at Augusta, and Corey Perry was seconds away from getting his face caved in by everyone's favorite gentle giant, Logan Stanley. It was almost perfect. We were right there. Just one punch was all I was hoping for from Stanley on Perry. We almost got it. Either way, though, the result is the main thing. 4-2 victory for the Winnipeg Jets in Montreal. Shot clock be damned. The Jets put a little distance between themselves and the Canadiens in that chase for home ice come playoff time. So we'll get to that in just a sec. Plus, a quick look at the trade market heading into Tuesday's deadline. Already some moves happening across the NHL. And then to wrap up the episode, we're branching out into the suites. Our first dessert interview is here. It's with Joseph Chaban of Chaban Ice Cream, the shop on Osborne, now Chaban Cheese as well. He's got an amazing story, just an absolute beauty. Their ice cream follows suit as well, so it's a great chat. Make sure you tune into that coming up a little later in the episode. Now, before we get into Jets Habs, quickly here, I got to mention this. Saint-Adolphe, if you don't know, they're one of the finalists for Craft Hockeyville this year, one of four finalists across Canada. Voting starts Friday morning, so please make sure go and vote at crafthockeyville.ca. Saint-Adolphe is trying to get an outdoor rink, which, I mean, in these times, it's even more important than normal. Get the kids outside and exercise, and it's much safer at least. But yeah, voting starts Friday morning, so let's bring that W to Manitoba. Love Saint-Adolphe. Check out the Pioneer Bar as well when you're down there. The wings are out of control good. But let's make sure some really good people here in Manitoba get a much-needed outdoor hockey rink and go to crafthockeyville.ca to help make that happen. Now let's get back to the ice. Winnipeg starts off their five-game road trip without the captain by grabbing the 2 points on Thursday night. Now, that's one of those games where if you just look at the stat sheet or you check your app the next morning and you see the shot clock, you see the total, and it ends up being 38-27 in favor of Montreal. It was actually 29-15 going into the third period before the Jets earned a slight advantage in the final frame. You might be thinking to yourself, same old Jets, outshot, outchanced. This is unsustainable. You can't play this way, but they're finding a way to get it done anyways, right? Like, it kind of fits the same formula that I think a lot of people are accustomed to when they think of how the Jets have found themselves into the top three in the North Division this year. But I didn't really see it that way, to be honest. And, I mean, Natural Stat Trick actually had the high danger chances in favor of the Winnipeg Jets in this one, expected goals for as well. I thought especially in the first period, we saw Montreal really rack up not a whole lot of quality, just kind of throwing the puck on net from everywhere. I mean, this is something they've done for a number of years now. They've always been a quantity over quality team when it comes to shot selection. The Winnipeg Jets are the exact opposite of that. But I don't know if I'm Connor Hellebuck. Sign me up for games like that every day of the week. I'm going to have great numbers, a ton of saves, a great save percentage, and I'll be able to stop the ones that I could see. And I thought he saw pretty much everything all night long. I mean, you don't want to give up 38 shots regardless because you're still spending a decent amount of time in your own end, too much time in your own end. But it's kind of like the Dos Equis, man, right? Like, I don't always give up 38 shots, but when I do, they're not very high quality. So I thought that was good, at least from the Jets' perspective. I mean, a hell of a start to the game, obviously. And the big shakeup we saw up front, I mean, it paid dividends early on with a trio that has seen time together earlier this season, but the third line, which, you know, in pretty much any iteration alongside Adam Lowry and Mason Appleton, they found a way to produce, and they didn't waste any time producing again. Perreault, a great play, a great pass to Josh Morrissey, who just unleashes a picture-perfect shot there. I love that line, and it has been, you know, they haven't been together a ton this season because of injury, and, you know, Paul Maurice clearly prefers putting Andrew Kopp beside Adam Lowry, but we've seen Lowry Pro Appleton absolutely take it to the opposition. I mean, they've feasted on anyone they've gone up with this season. And it's going to be tough to – I don't know if it's possible to have those three together once Blake Wheeler comes back healthy. It'll be tricky to try and work that out. Maybe there is a way you could rearrange the lines and make that happen. But man, oh man, they're just so damn good together. And Matthew Perreault, we've talked about it a few times here, but he is having a heck of a bounce back season. He just looks totally revitalized. And I made the point earlier, but I think that a number of these veteran players who have had more time off than they're ever really accustomed to, it's given them a bit of an extra jump into their step. And I think we've seen that with Perreault this season. So the third line I thought was great, or at least very good. The fourth line chips in with a goal as well. So your bottom six does everything you could ask them to. And good, I mean, Jansen Harkins, I don't believe, got a point on the play, but at least he popped off the page a couple times, made an impact in his 8 minutes and 50 seconds of ice time. Unfortunately, it was a bit more of a mixed bag for the top six. I don't know if any of them really covered themselves in glory through the first 40 minutes at the very least. And I mean, Paul Maurice didn't think so either. He threw that into a blender right off the get-go. Only 15 shots. Although, again, I didn't think the Jets were all that bad through 40 minutes, despite the shot clock. But we saw things shaken up. And I got to be honest, when I saw the second line put together, yeah, sign me up for that. I'm 100% okay having a Dubois-Szczesny-Ehlers line as a secondary scoring unit. I mean, it's tough because, again, I want to see Nikolaj Ehlers play pretty much 20 minutes, 20-plus minutes a night, and the only way he's going to do that is beside Mark Scheifele. But at the same time, maybe splitting those two up and having them on two separate lines, your two most potent offensive producers and line drivers on top of that as well, it might be most beneficial for the team. And I like the mix of Dubois, Ehlers, Szczesny. You get, you know, the speed and the playmaking ability of Ehlers, a big body, and still a guy that can fly in Dubois. And then Szczesny is just the jack of all trades. He can do anything, anywhere on the ice. I think that's a trio that's worth keeping an eye on as we move forward here. They might get a chance, right? I mean, they might get a chance over these next four games. Blake Wheeler's not coming back till after the road trip. So maybe we see a little bit of chemistry form with those three. Would love to see some production follow as well. I really like the build of that line. I think there's maybe something a little special that could brew in this ongoing effort to try and find Pierre-Luc Dubois and the right mix for line mates to really, really get him going a little bit more as we head closer to the playoffs. Mentioned Blake Wheeler not on the ice for this one, not with the team on the road trip. You know, I don't want to say blessing in disguise because they haven't confirmed it's a concussion. Who knows how long he could potentially be out for. But I guess the silver lining, if Blake Wheeler does come back after the road trip, is the 33, 34, the elder statesman of the club gets some rest at a time when he probably needs it. So you're going to get a more rejuvenated, refreshed Blake Wheeler coming back in the stretch run of the season. And then you get a chance as well to tinker with and maybe see what works and what doesn't in situations that you wouldn't have if Wheeler was still suiting up for the team. The big one was the power play. Wheeler's 5-on-5 play this year, we'll call it mixed to be kind and to be positive, right? But it's not what it was, and it's probably never going to get back to that point. But he's still quite clearly an elite producer with a man advantage. And I was curious to see how the Jets would rejig their top unit, at least. I mean, they kept the second one completely the same, so not changing anything up with the number one man advantage. But it was just the simple move of Mason Appleton going into Blake Wheeler's spot. And it didn't work out so well. The Jets weren't great on the power play. Couldn't really generate anything. I don't even know if they had a chance to write home about that hit the net, at least. I know Kyle Connor had a pretty decent one-time opportunity. They're going to miss Blake Wheeler there, no doubt about it. The one thing that I would like to see change, though, and this even goes when everybody's healthy, I want to see Mark Scheifele shoot the puck more. I want to see a little bit more of the power play run through 55. I think he's more than capable of it. I actually think he's got, look, Kyle Connor's the goal scorer on the team, but Mark Scheifele's release is up there with the best in the NHL. He just chooses not to shoot as much as some of the high-end goal scorers. I would just like to see him get a little selfish and maybe, you know, whether it's Morrissey or Connor at the other end, try to find Mark Scheifele in that one-time spot. He's got a hell of a release. We just haven't seen him shoot as much this year. He's been in more of a deferential role this season with the new-look power play with Wheeler below the goal line there. But maybe we can get a couple more Mark Scheifele looks in his happy spot over there on what was formerly known as Line A Island. I mean, he's more than capable of beating the goalie, even with a clear sight from that spot. We've seen him do it a ton of times this season as well. Now, maybe the best part of the game. The 2 points, yeah, great. The goals, outstanding. All of it awesome. But Logan Stanley was this close to making literally the entire hockey world buy a Logan Stanley jersey. I was shocked they didn't call a penalty on Corey Perry on the play. I mean, boarding or cross-checking, whatever you want to call it, to me, a clear penalty as he paced DeMello from behind into the boards. It was just, it's what you expect out of Corey Perry, right? It's a cheap shot. Guy's vulnerable and he throws a cheap shot out there on him. Logan Stanley, I mean, it's getting tough not to like this guy more and more as each game goes by, and then he pulls off a move like that, challenging Corey Perry, sticking up for his defensive partner. I loved it. Everybody loved it. It was awesome. The only crappy part of the whole play was Corey Perry. I mean, to be fair, he made the correct decision, right? Like, it's a business decision, the way DBs don't tackle Derrick Henry in the NFL. But at the same time, it's also a smart life move. Like, it's survival mode at that point. He's in his mid to late 30s. Like, there's no need to fight a 6'7" behemoth in his early 20s. So, all in all, it was funny to see. I was a little disappointed, though, that Logan Stanley couldn't get another shot or two in on Richard Perry there. But that was kind of the cherry on top of the 2 points for the Winnipeg Jets in that one. So, that does it for Jets Habs Part 1. Part 2 goes Saturday night in Montreal. A big, big opportunity for Winnipeg here to really push Montreal, I mean, realistically, out of the equation in terms of catching them. At that point, it would just be a three-team race for one of the top three spots in the North Division. I know Montreal still has games in hand, but 8 points back with only three in hand, right? It's going to be tough for the Habs, even with that amount of runway, to truly catch the Winnipeg Jets. And now the Jets are only 1 point back of Edmonton. They hold a game in hand on the Oilers. Quickly, I said before, I want to get to the trade deadline. The Islanders make the first big move, getting Paul Maire and Winnipeg's own Travis Zajac. The Zajac family is a bunch of beauties, and Travis is as well. So good for him for getting a chance to maybe go on a potential Stanley Cup run once again. But that's the big move, and once one big move comes, the rest of the dominoes start to fall. We actually saw that too. Columbus resting David Savard. Sorry, I shouldn't say resting. Scratching him so he doesn't get injured, because it's pretty clear they plan on moving him before Tuesday's deadline. And again, it seems like it's coming down between Winnipeg. Boston has been hot and heavy. Tampa Bay has been the sneaky sort of under-the-radar team, trying to maybe pull a fast one on everyone and grab David Savard out of Columbus as they look to reload for their Stanley Cup repeat. That would suck. But it is intriguing that Winnipeg remains in the hunt for David Savard, and we'll see if Chevy pulls the trigger on that. Josh Manson is an interesting name. A lot of you guys mentioned to me that Manson is someone to look out for, because Chevy never goes for the obvious move, right? It was the same when he grabbed Stastny at the deadline a few seasons ago. I would just like to know what the trade package going to Anaheim would be before I say yes or no on that deal. And real insightful comment. But it's, I just don't know. I don't know how much, like, is Anaheim going way, way, way overboard here? Like, if they're asking for a Heinola or even a Sandberg and a first-round pick, the answer is no. I'm not willing to give that up for Josh Manson. I mean, Sandberg and a first for Lindholm, yeah, I'd be okay with that. I don't think Anaheim is looking to move Hampus Lindholm either. So I'm kind of up in the air on that one. That one's a wait and see for me, but I would be intrigued by it. We'll see too. I mean, mentioning Paul Stastny, we'll see what St. Louis is up to, because they've very oddly fallen completely way behind the playoff line in the West Division, way behind Arizona right now, and I mean in danger of San Jose passing them as well. We know Vince Dunn has been on the trade market for a while with St. Louis, and they've got a ton of blue liners there. So maybe the Blues are another secret team to keep an eye out for as Winnipeg looks to potentially, I would imagine, I say potentially, as Winnipeg looks to make a move. I'd be shocked at this point if they didn't make at least one trade, especially for a blue liner, before Tuesday's deadline. Super jacked to our next episode coming Tuesday. We'll have a big deadline extravaganza planned for you guys. Some great guests coming on as well, so make sure you tune in a couple days for that. But quickly here, trade deadline season up and coming in the NHL. It just passed in the NBA, and basketball season won't be around forever. So you better get in on the action now with DraftKings, the leader in one-day fantasy sports. DraftKings is giving new players a free shot at millions of dollars in total prizes, and you can claim your free shot at millions in total prizes using code THPN during sign-up. Playing daily fantasy basketball, super simple. You pick the lineup, stay under the cap, and you see how your team stacks up against the competition. Every dunk, steal, assist, three ball, it all means so much more with the DraftKings Daily Fantasy lineup. Baseball fans, you may have missed out on season-long fantasy, so if you did that as well, now's the time to get in on all the daily fantasy action, where DraftKings has even more ways to make it rain for you on payday. And with DraftKings, of course, payday comes every day for players, so what are you waiting for? Head to the app right now. Download the DraftKings app now and use code THPN during sign-up. This week, DraftKings is putting you in the action with a free shot at millions of dollars in total prizes. That's code THPN, and you can get a free shot at millions of dollars in total prizes only at DraftKings. Minimum $5 deposit required. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details. We mentioned it earlier in the episode. It's time for something sweet. That's right. And I couldn't have picked a better person to help us kick off the dessert portion of the plates part of Skates and Plates. Really excited to have the ice cream, the dairy master himself, Joseph Chabon of Chabon Ice Cream and Chabon Cheese is here to join us. Joseph, how are you doing today?
I'm good, thank you. It's a pleasure being on your show.
Well, let's get started. We'll go back to a couple years ago. You have a really awesome, beautiful story about how Chabon got started. Can you just let us know the details about how everything began a few years ago?
Yeah, so my wife, she's from Syria, and her family were refugees in Lebanon and scattered all over the Middle East. My parents are actually Lebanese, so some of them were staying at our house in Lebanon. And when we moved to Winnipeg in 2015, I was recruited to open a cheese factory here for someone. And at the same time, the refugee crisis was happening, and I was looking for someone to help me try to bring her family to Canada, and it was unbelievable. I didn't know anyone in Winnipeg. And by luck, I found someone that said, yeah, the South Osmond community is trying to help Syrian refugees, and they're having a meeting. So I went to that meeting, and I just told them I need help. My wife's family, they're all refugees, and they lost everything. So they said, they saw this was something bigger than they expected. And one of the reverends said, yeah, for each family, we need to raise at least 40,000 if we want to bring them. And I was like, well, I guess we're going to have to forget this because this is a lot of money. And I don't have that, you know. So a week later goes by and someone from the community calls me and says, hey, we want to take a shot at this. We want to try to sponsor two families from your wife to come here. And I didn't believe it. It was like unbelievable. So they said, yeah, we have to do some fundraising and we got a GoFundMe page going. And then all of a sudden, like there's 10,000, 20,000, 30,000, 40,000. We reached like almost 60,000 within a couple weeks. And I was like, oh my God, this is unbelievable. Like I've never experienced anything like this. especially in Winnipeg is a new city for me. I was most of my life I lived in Ontario, and I just asked, like, do you think we can sponsor one more family because it's going so great? And they're like, yeah, definitely. And so this community raised over almost $140,000 for 13 people to come to Canada, and they're unbelievable. Like, I just fell in love with Winnipeg, especially this neighborhood and the community here. So I knew they're coming, and I was like, we need to have some jobs when they come. I know it's going to be difficult because the language is not too good. So I said, let's do a Lebanese restaurant. And typical man, he's thinking with his stomach first. We looked in this neighborhood in South Osborne, and there used to be a banana boat in the location we were in, but it's torn down and they rebuilt it, and it was just a shell. There was still gravel on the ground, so it was just windows and the walls, but nothing inside. And I was like, this would be great for a Lebanese restaurant. What happened, I started asking people that I knew in the community. I asked my friend Daryl, hey, what do you think of a Lebanese restaurant here? And he's like, are you out of your mind? Like, what are you? It's a high risk. Definitely it is a high risk. And he goes, you know, there used to be an ice cream store there. And when he told me that, I was like, no. So I was born as a second generation cheesemaker and dairy scientist. I'm like, you know, why don't we make ice cream here and make it from scratch? We can have like a really unique concept. And he's like, this sounds really good if you know how to make ice cream. I'm like, yeah, I make Swiss cheeses, I make Camembert, I make Brie, I make Emmental. And I'm like, yeah, I studied how to make ice cream is not as hard as making cheese, because cheese you have to look about 9 months down the road. I'm like, yeah, with ice cream you only have to look like 3 to 5 days down the road if there's any problems, so the capital you're putting in is not as much. he was like, I don't know what you're talking about, but sounds like you're crazy. And I was like, well, okay. I was like, hey, why don't you be my partner in this? And he was like, no, it's okay. Just want to help you out. So we made the first flavor, and he had a taste, and he's like, yeah, I'll be your partner. He was so excited. He was like, I have never tasted anything like this. So I was like, no, you already said no.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just joking around. So we got everything started in 2017. And my wife's family finally came. It took a while for them to come, and we had jobs for them when they came. And we opened up on the first day of winter in 2017, and it was like minus 20 that day. And I'm like, I think I'm going to go bankrupt before I open.
No, that's slurpy weather in Winnipeg and in Manitoba.
So there was a lot of delays in construction. And it was like, we were planning to open it up in, I would say, August 1st. And then it was delayed. We said, okay, September, then delayed to October. And then I said, listen, let's just make sure we have everything in place. Let's get marketing done really well. And we had some hype, like at least 2-3 months before we opened. And that was actually a good investment in getting a marketing director and working for us. And she was like, so you want to advertise of ice cream and you don't even have it out yet? And we're like, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, you get it.
Exactly. That's what we want. So we did our launch, and it was a good launch because family, friends, contractors we invited. So it was like really full. And then, you know, everyone leaves and you're like, okay, that's probably it, you know, like, so the next day was like minus 20 as well. we opened up at 11 and no one came until I would say 1 o'clock. And I was like in my head, listen, whoever comes now, I'm going to give them free ice cream because you're out of your mind to eat ice cream at minus 20. So first customer come and we're giving them free ice cream and they're like surprised, like, okay, yeah, we'll take it. No problem. And I was like, this person's so courage, like he's very courageous. And all of a sudden, another person came, and I'm like, hey, man, I think I have to stop giving free ice cream because it just got so busy.
So can you just explain your ice cream making process then?
So our model is we're getting raw milk from the farm, and we pasteurize everything on site, and the flavor is whatever is being pasteurized. So we're not adding shots. We're not adding flavor. It's whatever the... Like if it's caramel, the base is caramel. We're not putting shots of caramel one on top of base. No, we start at the pasteurization stage. And because of this, our batches are so big. And I had like so much ice cream in our freezer. I was like, man, this is going to last at least 3 months, if not more.
Yeah.
I was shocked. Within 3 weeks, it was all sold out.
Wow.
And it was in December. And I was like, thank God we opened in December. Like it was a blessing from God, because if we opened in the summer, we would have been shut down for 2 weeks after we were open. Because for each flavor, it takes about 3 days, 3 to 4 days, depending on which flavor it is, to make. And we have about 15 flavors, 14 to 15 flavors. And it's like, if we run out, you need another 15 days of production to get back to it. So that was really exciting. And slowly we got into it. And one of our values is community. And giving back to this community was a big thing for us because they're the ones who helped my wife's family to come to Canada. And we're so grateful for this.
Now, we've seen other restaurants go to this subscription model, but you were the first in the dessert industry to go towards an ice cream subscription model, something I had never seen before. You did it to save the business during the pandemic, and it's something that has been absolutely out of this world awesome.
We had a great summer. Our downfall was winter. Like, we do make some money in the winter, but it's no near enough to cover all the winter months. Like, we run at a loss. So we were like, okay, by next winter, we got to figure something out. We either closing or we got to do something. And all of a sudden, the pandemic happened. And we're like, we shut our doors in March. And it starts getting busy by April. April, May, June, then this is the time we make our money to cover a lot of the loss. And I'm like, oh my goodness. The doors are shut down. Everyone went on the EI assistance. I was looking at my wife. She's my partner, and Daryl's my partner. And we started strategizing on what to do. And one of them was always cheese. We can always make cheese as our backfall, you can say. And we're like, we can't make cheese now because it's summertime. And we got to focus on ice cream because we know in the summer we make money in ice cream. So Daryl was like, hey, someone told me of a subscription, like an ice cream subscription. His partner in his other business told him that. And it's like, yeah, that is a great idea. I've heard about it with so many other business owners that you can increase your revenue by 20% if you're doing a subscription model on top of what you're doing. But now it's like we got to change the whole entire structure of the company as delivering and subscriptions. And we're like, okay, we got to make it fun. We can't just be a delivery service and you're ordering today and we're delivering to you today, because with ice cream is very difficult. And we don't have enough revenue to go on because of what's happening in the pandemic, we have no cash flow anymore. So we said, okay, if we do a gift subscription once a month, you get 2 pints delivered to your house and it's $20. And we can build up from this. And you're getting the money at the beginning of every month. So that will help with revenue. At that time, the government was giving out, I want to say 40,000. I believe it was 40,000 at that time for struggling businesses as a loan. And we definitely took that. And all that money went to software and how to launch this platform. It went really quick because we had to find a good subscription model, a good platform. We're using Shopify, and for subscriptions, we're using Bold to deduct the money every month from their our customers' accounts. Mm-hmm. And then we had to get a delivery service where we can track all of our drivers and warn our customers when we're coming and how much time we need to get to their house. So you can imagine like where that money went. And we needed someone to, because it's not my expertise in e-commerce. It's now we're in e-commerce. And we hired Kate, and she was very expert in this. And so she got all the proper platforms ready. So when we did launch, we were hoping that we get maybe 100 to 150 subscribers. So we can build from this and do advertising behind it. And within the first day, we got almost 300. Within the first 2 days, it was 300 customers that signed up. And we're like, thank God we have all the right systems in place, because yeah. we would have crashed, you know?
Yeah.
And after, within 2 weeks, we'll say within the month, we got about almost 1,600 subscribers. And we're like, on top of me loving Winnipeg, I don't know how much more I can love it, because it's like to the max. It's coming out of my eyes and ears. Yeah, I'm so grateful for Winnipeggers and Manitobans, because truly they saved our company. We went from almost going to go bankrupt to rehiring people that were laid off and giving them proper salaries again. So we were so proud of that. We had a great summer. And then the reality hit back in about October, November, it hit back that we still have this problem with winter.
So that's where your shift to cheesemaking came in, right?
People do consume ice cream, but it's just not enough to sustain your overhead. So at that time, I'm like, okay, let me strategize what to do. I said, listen, let's go back to my knowledge and I can make cheese. We have the equipment to do that. So let's give it a try. So I started off with a firm feta and a soft creamy feta. And both styles are different than what we have here in the market. These styles are more like Macedonian, Bulgarian, and I have to say Lebanese as well, because that's what we consume. And I gave some to my friends, and they all gave us positive reactions. And we had to adjust the salt level, because in Lebanon, our salt level is like really high. We love salt. Where here in Canada, we have to put lightly salted, you know? And so that was the only adjustment we had to do, which was very easy to adjust. And we launched it in December. I started off with some specialty stores, and that went really well. More and more people started taking. So I was like, okay, let's start adding another line. Like, we have Lebni, which is like Greek yogurt, but much thicker and more cream inside. And it's best way to explain it is higher in fat and higher in protein. But it's not like cream cheese, which is like 30% fat. It's only 10% fat. Mm-hmm. So it's really good source of protein and probiotics. And it's different than what's on the market, because it's almost like a cream cheese. And then the second product we launched, that was the third, is we had the firm feta, then soft feta, then we had the labneh, and then we said, okay, let's launch ricotta, and that got launched like 2 weeks ago, and it's going really well with the ricotta. A lot of people are liking it. You can use it in your lasagna, or you can use it in sweets, like cannolis. So when we saw that, we were like, okay, why don't we launch the last thing we want to launch. For me, I don't want to have so many product lines that we lose focus. It's just have 5 product lines surrounding cheese, and then try to market those individually properly. When you have so much, you can't really focus on it. And the last thing to complement the ricotta is mascarpone, which it's very close to ricotta, but it's a higher cream fat. It's around 30%. So it's all ranging around the same product lines. Even though my passion is, and I grew up with when I was growing up, because my father had a cheese factory, is Camembert. It's Camembert and Tilsiter and Appenzeller and Emmentaler. This is like my true passion. But
yeah,
when you take your business and it's like, okay, what can generate a quick revenue where those other cheeses that take around 3 months to I don't want to say 9 months, but 9 months is like when it's the best aged, but you say 3 to 5 months aged and it's sold out the door, and there's no way I can wait one day, you know. So 3 months is like, I need a bank behind me. So that's why we're starting with these 5 cheese products first. And hopefully in the future, once we have a healthy cash flow, we can start adding the more unique cheeses to our product line. Like my passion is Camembert and Brie, just because those are the first cheeses I remember eating when I was a little kid.
So I'll keep an eye on that then. That's something to look forward to. You mentioned earlier there.
Yes.
Do you remember what the first flavor that your partner tried was?
So the first flavor was vanilla. The first flavor was actually the base of the vanilla. And he was like, what am I tasting here? And I'm like, listen, don't. I sort of regret giving him that because it wasn't ice cream. It was still a base. Like, it wasn't ice cream yet. I'm like, listen, just wait. And I'm going to forget the vanilla. I'm going to bring you a vanilla at the very end. I'm going to make something else. And I want to say it was we made like 12 or 13 flavors, and then we had a taste sample for Daryl and his wife at that time. And they came back, and that's when Daryl was like, yeah, I want to be your partner. And then he's like, where's the vanilla? I go, well, I don't want to like play with your mind, because the first time you thought that was vanilla, but it's not vanilla. So the vanilla, like the one that we made was, we use real vanilla beans. We use honey. And at that time we used cottage cheese. It came out really good, like really, really good. And just recently, just because we're making ricotta and you can replace the cottage cheese with ricotta, it came out actually even better. And I'm like, since we're making the ricotta already, let's change it out from the cottage cheese and put our ricotta, because it's already a sweet taste, you know? And that's really going really well. Like for me, vanilla is very holy to me, you know, because that's the first thing people think to try is either vanilla or chocolate, right?
I don't know if I've ever heard about ricotta being used to make ice cream. Is that common, or is that just unique to your place?
No, it's unique to our place. Something like with ice cream, there's a lot of water in ice cream, about 90% water. So you got to fill up that 90% with a protein source. It could majority of the people use skim milk to hold that ice cream. So I'm like, listen, instead of skim milk, we can add other protein sources. So some of our ice cream has the ricotta, some have cream cheese, some have like the cottage cheese, sour cream, and this is all protein source. And it gives a unique flavor to the ice cream at the same time. Like our strawberry, we add sour cream to the strawberry, and it actually enhances the taste of the strawberry because it's a little sour and it complements the strawberries. So it does work, but it's just more expensive. I would say a lot more expensive.
Yeah.
Yeah. But our whole goal is for someone to have an ice cream experience. Like, they're coming to Shea Dan to really indulge in ice cream. Yes, our ice cream is like $6.50 a cone, but it's all natural. It's all gluten-free. And we make sure, like, you're eating ice cream. You're not eating air, because ice cream, majority of the ice cream in the market, so when you put it into the churn, you can achieve over 100% air in your product. And what we're trying to do is we want to achieve at least 50% air. You do need air, because if it's there's no air, it's so dense that it's like a solid.
Yeah.
So the air, yeah. So we always aim for 50% air, and that way it's very dense. You're eating a product, not air.
You mentioned the vanilla is near and dear to your heart, and vanilla is always going to be a top seller. What are some of your best-selling ice creams?
So to be honest, vanilla is not our best seller, and people, they don't even try it. The thing is, I wish they tried it. The thing is, when our customers come into our store, they see like 14 flavors. They see like Salty Carl, Mojito Mint Patty, or Donnie Dark Coco.
Great name, so,
oh, thank you. So they're so intrigued of all these names. And we named our, I wish we didn't name it with this, but we named our vanilla Plain Jane. And I'm like, this is not plain. This is more like a exotic Jane. Why we named it Plain Jane? But our top seller, I would say, is Salty Carl. Caramel is, we make the caramel sauce from scratch. And people, when they first come in, they're like, we don't want something sweet. So we tell them all these other flavors, and then we tell them about the caramel, and they're like, no, we'll have caramel. And then they try it, and they're like, this is the best ice cream I've ever ate in my life. And I'm like, you just told me you don't want something sweet. And I start laughing. It's like, no worries. Like, it is really good, the caramel. Like, the Rocky Roads, we call it Rocky Ricardo, is really top seller. Like our Reese piece, I think what's different about it is like our Reese piece, we use natural peanut butter. We add honey and chocolate chips, and it just makes that flavor unbelievable.
Well, I got to be honest, Joseph. I'm definitely one of those people, one of those salted caramel fans.
Because yeah,
that's like, I'm a junkie for salted caramel. And the second I saw it, I was like, yeah, this is my jam.
Today we made caramel today, and it comes out as a soft serve first. And oh my goodness, like I'm just eating it, and it was like over a jar later, and it's soft, you know. It tastes different soft, and it tastes different hard, and both experiences is really good.
Well, if you ever need me to come down and, you know, take care of some leftover soft serve, just give me a call, okay?
Yes, definitely. I will.
Not too many places, if any, do have these options, but you have several vegan options right now. Can you just maybe take us through the difference between making your normal ice cream and then your vegan options?
Yeah. So when we first opened, we're like, okay, we have to have one vegan option or dairy-free option. And we're like, okay, let's make a coconut flavor where we add, it's got coconut base. We add shredded coconuts to it, or toasted coconuts. and we make a dairy-free fudge sauce. And people that were either vegetarian or vegan or lactose-free, they were like, this is unbelievable. Can you make a different flavor? So we would always have like a featured flavor as a dairy-free option. And more people started asking, like every third customer was dairy-free. They were asking. So we're like, listen, why don't we just make like six or seven flavors that are always on the board and we can just rotate it in our shop. So we have right now about seven flavors. We had to make another caramel one. That was the most recommended one to make for a dairy-free. And we have a cherry chocolate. We have a chocolate. We have mango, which is like, I love that one.
One of the other, I believe it's a newer addition to your menu, but can you explain what a Boozza bite is?
So a lot of people get disappointed because they think there's booze in the ice cream. Boozza is actually ice cream in our language, in Arabic.
Oh.
So we wanted to add a smaller size because we have 500 ml, like a pint size.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people were asking for something smaller in the jar because of the pandemic. We didn't want to serve cones at that time. So we said, okay, let's get a smaller size. So it's about almost a 200 ml size. It's about almost a scoop and a half in that jar. So it's like a nice single serve. So we're like, what do we call it? Like, what do we call these little guys? You have pints. And we're like, Boozza bite. So we went with Boozza, right? And it's going well. Like, it does sell, and it's a good to-go option.
Well, it's perfect for someone like me, too. My pants are getting a little too tight nowadays, so instead of just giving up ice cream, I can just, you know, downgrade in size from the pints to the Boozza bites.
Yeah.
Now, go ahead.
Yeah, like, I have this problem, and a lot of people that talk to me say to me, listen, when I eat your jar, I can't stop. I have to finish the whole pint. So going with a smaller size, you're forced to stop.
Yeah.
So that's a positive thing.
I appreciate it. That's good. That's perfect. That's perfect for me. Did you open up dine-in or is it still takeout? I know you guys had kind of a mini, you know, grand reopening last week.
Yeah. So this whole time our store was closed. And we weren't even serving cones to go even. And we're like, hey, let's get the proper protocol in place. Let's get people trained. And why not serve ice cream? We'll close the dine-in. And it just to go options. So you can come in and grab a cone and enjoy it on the river walk behind us, which is really nice. And yeah. And it's going really well. I didn't think this many people would come out and buy ice cream because of, you know, the pandemic. But, you know, as long as you're safe, we have proper things in place. That way you're getting a good ice cream and you're not worried.
I got two more questions for you here. We ask everybody this before they leave, but I've never had a dessert or a sweets place on the podcast. So this is uncharted territory for me. For the Jets game coming up in a couple of days here.
Yes.
What would be the Shabon version of an ideal game day dessert? If you were going to sit down and watch the hockey game, what would you have in front of you from Shabon ice cream and then maybe Shabon cheese as well?
We want to make a blue flavor. We got someone to make us blueberries. That way it can be a Winnipeg Jet flavor. For right now, I would indulge in maybe like a flight, get a couple flavors, enjoy it with the family. I would do like, I definitely got to do the Donnie Dark Cocoa caramel mix. It's unbelievable.
Ooh.
Like this flavor, like you have the chocolate on the bottom, the caramel on the top. And for the cheese, I would recommend the soft creamy feta. It's really new. It's really great on crackers. And you can make it into a dip if you like. Even the labneh. But the soft creamy feta, it's something different than most people think of feta.
Awesome. That sounds perfect. And I can't wait to see the Jets concoction that you guys come up with coming out soon. That's awesome. Before we let you go, just let our listeners know you guys are open for dine-in and takeout, but where else can they get any ice cream, any cheese? Just the floor is yours, and let everybody know how they can help you out.
So you can get any of our ice cream flavors or cheeses at our store at 390 Osborne. We're open every day from 12 p.m. to 10 p.m. And you can also get our products either at local specialty stores like Vic's, even Markwell Cheese are carrying our cheeses, which is awesome. And thank you very much. Co-op has it. Sobeys and Safeway started carrying it, which I was like so thankful for because they help save our company. They can go either to SheaBanIceCream.com or SheaBanArtisan.com and go under retail locations and see where they can grab this amazing stuff.
Awesome. All right. Well, we'll keep in touch, Joseph, and I'll talk to you by the end of the week, okay?
Awesome. Thank you.
That's it for the week. A big thanks again to Joseph Sheban for joining me. Just the nicest guy, hey? Make sure you head on down to Osborne for a cone or a bowl. I'm actually going to grab some ice cream in a little bit. It's major diet time for me after the weekend, so I'm going to enjoy one last bite of heaven before harsh reality sets in. I mean, it's just so easy being fat, but I got to do it. Me and the wife, we're a team. We're going to get through this together, but I'm going to grab a salty caramel ice cream on my way out before the hard work kicks in. Anyways, besides that, we're back on Tuesday. Like I mentioned, busy, busy episode on tap. Trade deadline day. So any move that Chevy makes or doesn't make, we will dive into that. We got the big one against Montreal on Saturday night before the Jets head into Ottawa for a few. Man, things are getting so good. I can't wait for the playoffs. Fast forwarded here. I'm so jacked for the games. Everything's going to matter a little bit more. And, I mean, the chase for home ice is going to be something to see between the Jets, Leafs, and Oilers. So until Tuesday, I'm Brandon Rowicki. Thank you guys so much for listening to another episode of Skates and Plates on the Hockey Podcast Network. Peace.